You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 489. 50 days in isolation. Staring at these walls. Total desolation. The truth it hurts. Desecration. The entire human race. Total isolation. I can't sleep. I'm having trouble breathing. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast, coming to you from the horrifying center of nowhere that we all happen to be individually stuck in. This is Adam White. I'm in a basement. You're probably in a basement. Who else we got? John, how you doing? How you holing up?
Yeah, boy! We're going to talk about Flavor Flav later on today, so that's my Flavor Flav. Impersonation. How am I holding up? You know, I'm doing all right, man. I mean, I'm bugging out a little bit, but listen, I mean, if the quarantine actually works, which I think it does, then I'm all for it. Even though it's a pain in the ass, I'm all for it. The problem is a lot of people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, Adam, and it's getting worse.
I'd like to see you, John, out on the street, swinging a bat. You're trying to enforce the law vigilante style, only to, you know, at the end of the day, clubbing people, you realize that, oh shit, you're part of the problem because you were out there in the streets, you know, close distance clubbing people.
And sounds like a Twilight Zone episode.
I know, right? You'd fall to your knees.
You have like a G.I. Joe, like a breakdown, like at the end of the old episodes of the cartoon G.I. Joe, where you're like, now I know, and knowing is half the battle.
No. I think the Twilight Zone one is the better one. John drops the bat and then the camera like just pans up or just like zooms out from him on the street. He falls to his knees and he's just like, no. And then, you know,
damn you,
the virus consumes John.
Yeah.
Tom, what about you?
You know, I'm hanging in there, man. It's not real exciting, but you know, do what we can do. My wife's been very productive. She's painted the half the house and I've done a couple small things.
I am both fortunate and jealous of what's going on in the world, in the world, not in the world in terms of like people getting sick and dying, but in terms of people I know sitting around.
You heard it here first. Adam is jealous of all the people sick and dying.
No, there's a lot of people that I know that aren't as, I guess, as fortunate as me in that they can do their work from home. So they're in a, you know, they're legitimately just like sitting around exactly like painting the house or doing whatever you do. And I don't want that because I want to be able to do my work. But on the other hand, I feel like I'm missing something. Like, I feel like there is some shared thing that a lot of people are going through right now that I'm not really taking a part of. And while I am sitting around in my house with my kids around me all day listening to records, I'm not sitting there doing nothing. Like, I'm sitting there performing the same labor that I would have been if I was at my office. And, you know, I want to experience a little bit of the hopefully creative juice spurning boredom that the rest of the world is. You know, all these people are like, they're fucking making art. They're just recording bedroom records. They're creating whole, you know, projects to keep themselves from going stir crazy. Like, I'm interested to see what I would do in that scenario. But on the other hand, you know, it is sort of nice that I have work to do. And you know what, out of all things, like, where would you guys measure, let me lead into something here. If you were to gauge your general anxiety level this week versus last week, where are we sitting? More higher, lower?
You know, honestly, I don't even, what is anxiety? I mean, I know people use it, but what is anxiety? I mean, is it like feeling of unease? Is that the new definition of anxiety?
I believe it has anxious in it, John.
Well, I know, but at least Adam will know, in the Italian American community, anxious is used a little differently than it is in the broader community, the word anxious.
Let's say looming sense of dread that you cannot push out of your head and is a continuous source of near panic. Let's say that.
Near panic?
Okay, maybe not near panic.
Well,
but
there's different levels
of it. Your mileage may vary
I think when you're a father and you have a mortgage, Adam, and a certain amount of kids, you're always at like a two for anxiety, even at like the best of times, or maybe like a 3 or 4 even, because you have all these things that you're responsible for. So I think you always have a little bit. Now, I'm never the type to get like the crippling type where you just can't go on, but I've certainly been known to wake up in the night to pee and lay in bed and think about all the things I'm responsible for.
So how are you rolling this week compared to last? Are you feeling, you on the level, or are you feeling worse?
No, I'm okay. I you know what I do, Adam? I try to keep a sense of gratitude where I'm going, we're in a better position than most to ride this out. We have a really good, our finances are in really good shape to begin with. And although my wife's not working, I think we will ride this out just fine. There's nowhere to spend money other than Discogs. So that has been an issue, I must admit, but
nevertheless. It has. It really has.
It's like, I have so many records to listen to, dude. I mean, I have thousands of CDs right now that I don't even have access to because they're in boxes because I had to do remodeling, but I have so many records to listen to. I'm never going to make it through before I'm back to work, you know, on a regular way, but I still like constantly feel the need to have something new. Like the best record ever is the one I haven't listened to yet.
I want to swing back to the record thing in a moment because that's been my experience. But John, like, how are you feeling? How are you taking this in?
I guess I would say I am feeling more anxious, if only because the past couple days I've been watching news and they're like, it's way worse than we thought it was going to be. And then they're like, it's going to go at least until April, which I mean, a month under quarantine, a month more under quarantine. Pretty severe, you know, and so I am somewhat more anxious. I think we'll get through it. I hope we'll get through it. But I mean, I am aware that there is certain risks out there, and I'm usually not a very worried or troubled guy with regard to germs. Like, you know, people, like, I never use disinfectant because I think it's actually worse than regular soap.
Kills off your ability to fight the, it's right. Okay to have a little dirt in your hands. Yeah.
Well, the point, like 99.99% of germs are good germs in that they destroy germs that can harm human beings. And when you use the disinfectant, it kills all the germs, which means only one bad one needs to get slipped through the cracks. The point being, I have been more concerned about that those issues and washing your hands. I mean, I always wash my hands, but you know, like you say, wash your hands frequently, that kind of stuff. And honestly, like normally I'd be like, whatever, I'm going to go to the market, not worry about it. But because I have family members, you know, that kind of thing, I am more concerned about that. And I'm not doing any of that kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, I'm not like,
yeah, I've definitely picked up my hand washing, and you know, I don't have any gross habits. I don't like go to the bathroom and not wash my hands or anything, but yeah, I was not a compulsive hand washer. And I've definitely picked that up a little bit. The thing I've noticed, and I don't know if you guys can relate to this because I'm at home so much, I definitely have noticed I'm eating more and I'm drinking more. And I don't know about, I know you're not much of a drinker, John, but so I've actually downloaded this app so I can count my calories. It's like, it's enough already. I just can't sit home and eat all day. Well, but I'm shocked at how many calories an ounce of rum has.
Don't tell Neil.
Do you think my app will judge me when I put rum in as breakfast, because that's the only place I can put those calories?
Oh, I have thoughts about this. So, all right. So
don't tell Neil about, well, I'm sorry, I missed that, Adam. You're making a joke of my expenses. I missed it.
Yeah. No. Okay. So, I mean, I don't know how many of the people that listen to the show follow me on things, but I guess Instagram would be the evidence of this, but over the last, like since February of last year, I lost like 40 pounds, maybe. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but like around 40.
I always thought you were relatively thin to begin with.
I was not super heavy, but like I went from like, say, like 185 to 150, right? And
wow, I haven't weighed 150 since like freshman year of high school.
So I lost a bunch of weight, and it was, I started by doing that Noom app, but then I realized that the Noom app was sort of like basically a calorie counter and some, yep, and some teaching stuff. So then I realized, oh, yep, well, now that I know how to calorie count, I'm just going to calorie count and not pay for the new map.
No, absolutely. But it's more of an accountability thing.
It is. And it was useful. It was useful for me getting started. I don't want to shit on the new map or anything. It was cool. It was, yep, cool for me. But anyway, so
I don't have Noom. I have its free non-union equivalent.
Yeah. Okay. So now I have Noom's free non-union equivalent as well. And I've kind of continued calorie counting. And the person out of everyone in my life that is like, all of a sudden shown up on the comments of my whatevers and been like, holy fuck, dude, eat a sandwich, has been Liverpool Neil.
That's all right.
So yes. just telling you.
You can't, let me tell you something, dude. Neil has become one of my very best friends, but you can't win with this guy. You know, he just, it's always something.
So, I've got, I,
He's a grumpy old bastard.
I've got a comment about Liverpool Neil. Liverpool Neil is always writing the podcast and saying, why are you playing hip-hop? Why are you playing that? That's not punk. That's not punk. Liverpool Neil posted a picture on Facebook. I don't even know why. And in the picture, he had a giant poster of Amy Winehouse. And then next to that, he had a skateboard deck with Amy Winehouse on the skateboard deck.
You're only feeding into his madness by giving him so much airtime.
I don't even know what Amy Winehouse has to do with skateboarding. And listen, I'm not anti-Amy Winehouse. I don't care one way or another.
You heard it here first. John hates Amy Winehouse.
But the point being is, for a guy that's always bagging on us, you know, because we'll play like, you know, Owls in the Bags or the Screamers, and Liverpool Neil be like, that's not punk. This guy's got a literal shrine to Amy Winehouse. That's not punk from Liverpool Neil anymore.
He's got a shrine to
Amy Winehouse, and that's fine, and that's good. But that, listen.
You're jello be offering me, John. No,
actually, Tom, I was talking when you tried to cut in, so you're jello-baffering me.
You're dominating the conversation. But no, what I was going to say is his apartment isn't called Punk News. His apartment is called whatever his apartment's called. You know what I mean? I think that would be his argument, is that he's not required to – his apartment isn't – you know, it doesn't say the Punk apartment on it. You know, that's the argument. And I think
there's – these guys that are, like, really homophobic – you know, they're more likely to be actually closeted gay than people that aren't really homophobic. Same.
Oh, parent. My gosh. That's a fight.
Anyways, backing off of this.
Hey, so if you want to hear more Liverpool Neil, Punk Tie Die podcast, he's a very funny guy, but he's also he's a bitter old Britishman, and we have a good time. So
John's been
apparently holding on to some anger towards him. So
all right. So rolling back to the two threads that I was holding on to there before we got on that weird ass tangent. So first of all, anxiety levels. So if I had to judge where I'm sitting on this, it still hasn't affected anyone personal to me. And I've been generally okay, just like hanging out and cooking and, you know, being around my kids and stuff like that. Like that's all pretty all right from my standpoint. Yes, we are totally drinking more than we would have otherwise. And what is stopping me from doing that? Well, all right. Last weekend was my birthday weekend, so I was drinking a lot more anyways that weekend. But
you're a little old to get a whole weekend for your birthday, Adam.
No, I decided since I was going to be locked in the house for 3 days with the kids and not being able to do anything over the weekend that was my birthday. I'm the kind of person that ignores my birthday on most occasions. Like, I don't like to draw attention to it. But this time, I was going to be fucking obnoxious. So
you didn't turn like 40 or something, did you?
Nah, I turned 38, right? It's not interesting.
Oh, okay. All right.
But what I did was I planned and cooked like three pretty elaborate meals. And then I drop shipped a whole bunch of like craft beer. Cause the local breweries had started doing like shipping around the region trying to make people stay at home. So I took some advantage of that. And, you know, like I had a whole thing set up where I'm like, if I'm going to be in like quarantine birthday, I'm going to get wrecked. So, but the temptation has been like, what are you doing on those days when it's not that happening? And I've been really trying to maintain some sort of like weekend weekday schedule here. Like I'll go a little hard on it on the weekends, but in between I'm just going to try to like live like a person and not like let myself get destroyed.
That's a wild birthday weekend, John. Did you hear that? He prepared three ornate meals for himself.
I did.
Those Canadians really know how to tear it up.
I'm the cook, and I really enjoy like doing chef stuff. So it's like it's my weekend, and I'm locked in the house. Then I'm like, you know what? We're gonna cook like a 15-pound chicken
so
right now.
What about everybody's parents? Everybody's parents a little older. Are we concerned about that?
I am, and that is the only thing that like is seriously concerning me, right? So even like my work anxiety has sort of subsided from this week to last because the Canadian government kind of stepped up and they went and they looked and they said, okay, we're going to be in this for several months potentially, and the amount of help that we had available was kind of anemic. So like basically what they did is they went from like if you're a small business, they had like a 10% wage subsidy that they had announced a few weeks ago, which is, you know, it does nothing. Like you may as well be on EI at that point. Or do you guys call it EI? What do you call
public
it?
Assistance? Public assistance?
Welfare. What do you call welfare? Just call it welfare?
Public assistance. Welfare.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's employment insurance in Canada. So everyone calls it EI. you know, but you may as well, be on
unemployment insurance is different. We have unemployment also.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's different from welfare. That's something that companies pay into.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Welfare is essentially like the dole, the British would have called it, right?
Yeah. All right. So whatever the former one you said was, that one. Anyways, 10% wage subsidy wasn't going to do it. Like, we would have had to lay people off or something like that. And we had come up with this, like, this crazy scheme where, like, me and the other business partners were going to see how long we could go taking no income at all, just so that we could keep our other employees employed and not have them have to lay them off and stuff like that. And we had come up with this, like, basically, like, really stressful, anxiety induced austerity budget to keep the business alive for as long as we were going to, you know, be making no money. But then that wage subsidy has in the week from last to this, from this week to last, kind of gone up to 75%. And
damn,
which is something that, like, had been happening. Like, the UK is doing that. I think at, like, I mean, I think the UK is doing it like 80% even or something like that. But, like, all the Scandinavian countries are doing it. And it was sort of like one of those things we sat around last week. We're like, wouldn't it be nice if the government stepped up and gave us the fucking, like, European, Northern European style wage subsidy, and then we wouldn't be as doomed from a financial standpoint as we were a week ago.
But you know, the government doesn't have any money, right, Adam? They only have one source of income, the government, and it's charging you back in taxes. It's just this kind of dream, like, this,
our source of income up here is that we steal and destroy the land of the native people, and then we sell it to other people.
I thought I thought Canada made money by selling maple syrup.
Yeah, it's from maple syrup, and
that's a multi-trillion dollar industry.
Maple syrup and colonialism is how we make our money. Tom, I don't think
you have enough land left to cover that, but yeah.
No, we do. I don't really care too much about where the magic money is coming from. I'm going to go on the assumption right now that I'd rather that be a problem for later than me have to lay off 8 people and close our business.
You've been doing that for 10 generations. No, I get that. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we're in a situation too where, like, my wife's probably going to be able to draw unemployment, and she's a small business owner. It's insane. But the fact of the matter is, as our kids have gotten older, we've watched, because we used to be the type of taxpayer who would get all our money back. But as we go on, now we're not takers anymore. We're givers. We almost always end up paying at the end of the year, despite the fact that we also get a ton taken out of our checks. So it's just, you know, the money will. We're essentially mortgaging money here, is what we're doing. You know, every one of us almost who have a decent, steady source of income. And I'm not saying they shouldn't do it even, because I think it's the government can't tell people they can't go to work and then not do something about it. I get that. But it's just this elation that people feel about these checks we're getting. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily happy about what it's going to do to the long term structural aspects of the world's economy. I'm more happy that there's no, like,
you're just happy what it's going to do for the short term structure of the white economy.
The cliff we're not sitting on.
The white family, not the white race. Yes,
yes, exactly. The white race, fuck. But the white family is really what I want to make sure is okay for the next year month. So you know what? So between that coming into play up here and the fucking sun coming out today and all that, like, I'm okay. But going back to what you said, and I guess we'll get the punk news stuff in a minute. Listeners, there was sun today. It was amazing. It's rained for a week. We'll get back to punk news in just a minute, people who actually want to hear us talk about NoFX.
Or will we?
Maybe. But the parents thing is what worries me, right? Because I feel like my parents aren't taking this shit seriously. Like, on the one hand, they are. Like, they're staying home. They've made efforts to not, like, you know, I know they're pining to see, like, their grandkids and stuff like that, but they haven't shown up to, like, take the grandkids or anything. So, like, we haven't had any weird situations with them in that sense. But I feel like my mom is, like, a little bit too liberal about going to the grocery store and stuff like that right now. And, like, even today, she sent me a message this morning where she's like, I made a bunch of roast beef. Do you want some? And I'm like, what? I guess.
Yes,
and
I do.
She's like, I mean, and she's like, I'll drop it off. And she's just like tooting around town. And I'm like, I don't think you should just be like ripping around town doing your normal mom thing. I think you should maybe stay home for a while. And like, you bringing me extra roast beef is probably not an essential service. But hey, we got beef.
Where's the beef?
All right.
Where's the punk news? All right. So anyways, yes, this is the punk news podcast. People, talk to us about things that are going on in Monk News. John, is there any pertinent mail that we can jump to?
Let's punch that to next week, because we spent a half hour talking about Adam White's roast beef and Tom's socioeconomic policy, you know, so.
All right, so we will punt the mail to next week.
That's all right, John. I got the feeling you'll be able to level the score here a couple stories in. We'll be all right.
Listen, I'm coming out swinging and for revenge.
John, what do you want to tell people about the lockdown freakout?
Oh, yeah, yes. So I'm quite proud of Punk News, and by proud of Punk News, I mean proud of me. I believe we're the first website to...
He's been thinking it for years, but it was the first time he said it out loud.
I believe we're the first website to stream live performance specifically to entertain people during the whole lockdown. And other websites started doing it 3 days after us. I was going to say,
it's gone crazy now.
It has, but we did it 3 days before anybody else I saw doing it. Not that that necessarily is a thing of pride, but I'm glad that we're doing this fun thing. We've had a lot of really neat performances. We've had Catbite. We've had Crazy in the Brains. We've had Omnigon. We've had a whole bunch, and we got a couple more coming. Honestly, these are turning out to be a lot more fun than I thought. Oh, Teenage Bigfoot was really good. These are turning out to be a lot more fun than I thought they would because, I mean, listen, it's not like an actual live show. However, bands are kind of like looser and just kind of hanging around. So they're doing a whole bunch of songs they don't usually do live. They're having fun. They're talking to the audience. And we did Turbulent Hearts. And so honestly, like, these are coming out like way better than I thought they would. I thought they would be kind of crappy and kind of lousy sounding. But they, so I got to get this one to technology. They're sounding good. People are having fun. The artists are having fun. And I think this is a success. Tomorrow we've got Christy Road of Choked Up, which would be very cool. And then we've got Stolen Wheelchairs on Friday. And that's close to the last one or one of the last ones. I'm just curious, briefly, are you guys enjoying these? And if you're not, that's fine, and say so. But also, should we keep doing those, or is the joke or whatever complete at this point? You know what I'm saying?
I've been watching a fair amount of them, not necessarily like the whole thing, but I've seen a bunch of different ones, some of them that we ran, some of the bigger bands have been doing them too, kind of on their own volition. So I've actually been watching them, and I sort of enjoy it, but I think we discussed this last week. This is not going to replace the
Stupid, you're not stupid and fun, but just kind of fun and silly, you know?
Yeah, no. I think they're cool. And listen, I'm all for anything. These artists are going to have a tough time. I don't think a lot of them in the smaller bands really make a living doing it. So hopefully they'll still have their, you know, regular job or whatever. But anything we can do to help these smaller bands, I think it's cool.
You think we should keep doing them then for like the time being?
I mean, I don't know, John. You and I haven't had a private conversation about how much of a pain in the ass it is. So I guess that's ultimately up to you.
They're a little bit of a pain in the ass, but not that much, honestly.
Well, for the time being, I don't know. I don't know why not. If people are still interested in doing them, and it's always hard to, I don't know how many people are watching them, but.
Well, that's the other thing is like, if there's a technical problem on either end, that's like, that's the hardest part is like, the relatively low level of stress, but it is a level of stress is all right. Are they online? Can I see that? You know what I mean? And
is it more or less stress than doing a premiere?
More stress. Cause I don't give a shit about the premieres. Shit about the premieres. You know, like most premieres that we do are things that I don't care about that people just ask about, you know? And also like, you know, if a premiere is going to work properly before it even goes live. This is truly a live
thing.
So yeah. True. So this is truly a live thing. So you don't ever really know if it's going to work out or not, you know, until it happens.
And I suppose if somebody freaks out, there's not a lot of things you can do other than unplug them. But by then, who knows what happens, right?
Well, I mean, like if somebody says, you know, I don't know, I hate so-and-so, I'd be like, well, they said it, not us, you know.
Starts going on like a rant between songs about how the Jews are controlling the economy and or something.
What I'm more concerned about is just some band, like some knucklehead. Like bands are, like even bands that are semi-successful can be surprisingly knuckleheaded. And that like, they'll just forget to do it, even though I reminded them like 12 hours beforehand.
Like that. No, okay. I thought you were going to say bands can be knuckleheaded as far as they think sometimes that any publicity is good publicity. Yeah, so we'll do something really stupid. And I think these things probably, I mean, they probably get watched more after the fact than while they're actually streaming.
But. They are more fun live. For some reason, they're more fun live. They really are.
No, I get that. But I mean, only so many people are available at 4 o'clock to watch something.
You think that's a bad time? You think we should do it like 8 or 9 o'clock at night?
Well, you want to work all night, John?
I would do it like for the time being, I would do it like 9 o'clock on a Friday or a Saturday, you know.
It's like, you know, so for example, of the bigger ones, obviously the first couple of huge ones were like Dropkick Murphys and Cro-Mags. But now like Metallica is streaming a full live show on their YouTube channel every Monday night.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, the first two have been from 2017 and 2019. It's like, come on, guys, give us something decent. Give us some Cliff Burton or at least Jason Newsted, you know. But so some of the bigger bands, you know, I don't know what their motivation is. You know, I guess they get enough streams. It is something they get paid for. But these guys aren't hurting for money, right? They're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. I don't know.
There is a ton of this stuff that seems to be coming online, like more and more and more live streaming. And I've seen like labels organizing it and all this stuff. And I have to this
day, little festivals like couch festivals,
digital festivals. Yeah. Stuff. So, yeah. And that seems to be the big thing as I've seen all sorts of digital festivals and all that. The problem for me is that I have watched exactly zero of any live stream anywhere.
Oh, really? You haven't caught any of it?
I have caught none. None of the external internets, none of the one on Punk News.
You're too busy like cooking up your new roast beef recipe and drinking craft beer.
I mean, you know, virus or not, the Adam theory where I have four slots worth of time in the universe is pretty much maintained during this period. So I'm not sure when I'm, cause I imagine that the ideal way to watch one of these things is live. So you can actually like be interacting with the other people that are watching it online or something.
Right? And the band, like you could write to the band and the band will respond. And the band,
right? So I totally have no time or interest in like going and like, you know, oh, I'll watch the live stream from last Tuesday on YouTube right now. Cause I'm like, no, I have like 45 other things to be doing right now than doing that. Right. Just does not occur to me that that is the thing that I need to do. So I don't know. So like on the one hand, like bands are going stir crazy. A lot of them are, you know, stuck with each other depending on where they are. So you got to do something. So, you know, I know everyone's making their like bedroom records right now and whatever, right? But you can only do that so much. So if you want to interact with people, like it is pretty much one of the only ways to do it. And I don't begrudge that at all. And I encourage it. It just, like, I don't know what it takes to make one of those things intrude into my life. Like we don't get to the end of the day, put the kids to bed and go, oh, let's go check what the Dropkick Murphys live stream was today or something like that. Like, we're like, no, we have to continue watching Tiger King like the rest of the universe, right? Like, I don't know how these things break through the atom barrier of cynicism and everything else. So, I mean, I encourage them. I don't quite get it. I don't get how you do a festival and make it have a vibe, right? Like make it have a feeling. And that's what I'm really curious about. Cause I'm seeing this too, even outside of, outside of the music world, this is something that's always been said about like conferences and stuff like that. So if there's a conference for your profession and there's people doing talks and stuff at the conference, well, oftentimes these days, those things are recorded and then put online by the conference organizers. So you could get in an airplane and get in a hotel and then go spend 3 days at a conference talking with people. Or you could just stay home, save all the money and watch all the talks on YouTube. And I have never done the latter. Like in the times of my life where, you know, I've been privileged enough to be like flown out to a conference somewhere with my job, I'll get in the plane and go to the hotel and go to the conference and be with the people in the room. And that's where I learn stuff. I have never once like glommed on to like, oh, I'm just going to watch this guy's slide deck on YouTube and, you know, pick up all the info that I would have as if I was sitting in the room. It just does not work for me. And I feel like this is some aspect of that where it's just like, I am not I can't consume live music on the fucking internet. It just is not a me thing. So I'm gonna wither up and die. That's what I'm saying. If this goes on much longer.
Fair enough.
That said, please watch the Punk News streams. They're great, and we encourage you to. Don't take Adam's.
They are great. I mean, honestly, like they're a lot of fun, and like the bands are just being like real relaxed about it, and like you can talk to them, and they crack jokes. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Just because I'm dead inside, people. I wasn't trying to darken that down. But John, speaking of the world of positivity, tell people about the Facebook.
Oh yeah, so listen, a bunch of people. So we started a new Facebook. It's called The Punkies Podcast, and for a while we still do. We also have a group, not a page, a group for just Tom, Adam, and myself to talk about the punk news stuff. And we thought it was secret for a while, but I guess it wasn't. And so we
got was it public? Oh, that's funny.
It wasn't visible. Like you had the request to join, kind of thing.
So we had a whole bunch of people request to join, not the Punk News Facebook page, but the Punk News Facebook Punk News Podcast Facebook group. So I had to reject them. And last week we said join the page, and so people like probably thought they were joining the page, and they're like, they asked me to join it, they rejected me. What's going on? So if you requested to join the Punk News Facebook group, try again, but go to the Punk News Podcast Facebook page,
which requires nothing except for liking.
Right, and we made the Punk News Facebook group secret where we organized things. And I assure you, whatever mysteries or exciting or things you think is going on in the Punk News Facebook group, it's not that exciting. So the Facebook page is much more exciting.
I don't know, John. They could be privy to your musings where you leave little mental notes to yourself like, hey, remember to mention this. Yeah. They're the kind of your equivalent of like when Jerry Seinfeld woke up in the middle of the night and wrote that note to himself, and then he was asking everybody what the joke was.
Right.
You see that episode? John's half-baked thoughts.
All my thoughts are half-baked. John's quarter-baked thoughts. The point being, go to at Facebook, The Punk News Podcast. We've got a separate page for The Punk News Podcast. I'm trying to make it like not too intrusive, so we don't post every day, but every other day or so we have something kind of funny or whatever going on. Check it out. Yeah.
My thoughts are all baked. All right, so what?
Adam, you Canadian pothead.
Do we want to? Do you want to play a piece of music? Anybody?
Yeah, play some music, Adam.
Okay, so before we get going, so there is a band out of that was out of Burlington, Ontario, back in 1993. That was called the Vapids, and they were a Ramones Corey band that played sort of around the Southern Ontario and upstate New York-y area back then, that predated me being in punk, but were very fondly remembered, and they still play today. Their lineup has kind of shifted over the time, but they have a frontman that's been in the band for forever now. So the Vapids suddenly, for some reason, and I don't know the connection here, all of a sudden showed up as part of like two pretty relevant like COVID-19 related stories in the past week. So the first bit of this was that there's an Italian label called iBuy Records, and they went and they put out a tribute to the Vapids last week that was 37 songs long from like bands across the world. And the trick to this was that like all the bands picked a song, recorded it fast and quick and like into a cell phone, so it's like super lo-fi. So they went and put together like 37 super lo-fi Vapids covers from bands around the world. And all of the money that is raised from the sale of the record on Bandcamp are being donated to the Italian Red Cross that are dealing with, you know, all this. But then at the exact same time, the exact same week, Jimmy Vapid, who is the lead from the Vapids, he went and he released a record called Short Songs About a Virus, where he basically asked all of his friends around the world to give him lyrics. So he had 30 people send him in lyrics, and then he recorded 30 sub 40-minute songs using those lyrics and him just like writing and recording all of the music at home. So, and that is also raising money for the Italian Red Cross. And the two projects seem completely unrelated as far as I can see. It's either a really good coincidence or I don't know what. But in any case, I'm going to play a handful of songs from Short Songs About a Virus by Jimmy Vapid and friends. So these tracks have been written by people from sort of all over the place, by folks from a handful of Italian bands, given where the money's going, but a handful of bands across Canada and the U.S. and everything else. So I'm going to play from the Short Songs About a Virus thing. I'll play three songs. This might get us the whole minute of
of audio here. So we are going to play. I had this in my mind earlier, but I don't know. I'm going to play three fucking songs. They all sound like the Ramones, so you know what it's going to sound like. It's great. Here you go. This is Jimmy Vapid and Friends with three random short songs about a virus. Be back in, I don't know, 80 seconds? All right, we're back. That was Jimmy Vapid singing short songs about a virus. Now, let's talk about some of the stuff that happened in the actual punk news world this week so people don't get too mad at us. So first of all, NoFX, they've
too late, Adam. Too late. They're already mad.
Yeah. Well, hey, if we're the worst problem in your life, listener, you got it pretty fucking good.
Free entertainment. That's what we provide.
Yeah. So NoFX has been releasing videos and songs at sort of a trickle pace over the past few weeks, all leading up to something, some record that they're going to put out at some point this year. But in any case, so we're going to talk about one of the songs that came out in particular. This is for a song called PRBOD, and it is basically about which of the bands who are playing punk rock bowling are, which of the individuals in those bands are going to OD first. So it, you can check the video out. It's on YouTube. It is essentially made up of archival footage of live bands playing at punk rock bowling over the past few years. What do we think of this sucker? Tom, you're always back and forth on the NoFX file.
Yes, I criticize because I love. So I have mixed feelings about this, and I didn't even want to listen to it at first, but I listened to it. So musically, I'm going to say right off the bat, I don't think it's anything special. It's uninspired musically, but I actually love these type of NoFX songs where they're so like specific and they name names and are sort of these list songs, what I would call the NoFX list songs. Cause they have a bunch of them like, you know, that song when he got married and he said, I got two jealous agains.
We've got two jealous agains again. And then I only have one jealous again, which is
what we got. But I always love those kind of songs. And I swear to you, I have bought records because they've been name checked by NoFX. So I really like the lyrics of this song. I think it's fun. I can't believe that nobody has OD'd at Punk Rock Bowling yet, if we're being honest.
Is that true, though?
I don't have no idea. But they said who's going to be the first. I have no idea. Maybe the first among the bands. I'm sure like on the streets of Fremont Street have OD'd, right? I mean, it's just inevitable. So here's the bottom line. Musically, I give this a 5. Lyrically, I give it a solid 9. I enjoy it. They're doing this weird thing where they're rolling the songs out one by one, and I haven't been really that into it. None of the songs have blown me away, but I think if they keep doing this, it's definitely going to get me a little more excited for the full length because you'll have such good knowledge of it rather than just dropping it and have to consume it all at once. I don't think this is a bad plan, and a lot of bands have been doing this. So, you know, good for them. I have every NoFX album. I could draw you like a chart of peaks and valleys to where I've enjoyed them more, enjoyed them less. And they've definitely been a bit on the downswing lately. So we'll see what happens.
I agree with Tom principally. I agree with most things he said. One of the things I like about Noah, I mean, I'm not even a huge NoFX fan, but one of the things I like about them is they are still somewhat of an edgy punk rock group, where honestly most punk rock groups aren't edgy. And in true NoFX slash, I would say, like Mad Magazine style or whatever, Fat Mike actually has some really funny lyrics here. One of them is, I hope it's not, it's something like, I hope it's not Charlie Harper, because I would be so sad. But if it was one of the Partisans, that wouldn't be so bad.
What about John? What about, I hope I don't get shot?
Right. So
that's the ballsiest lyric, right? That's some ballsy stuff. I love that. That's great.
So I think that's all very funny. And what I do like, no effect, really, no other band has caught on since, like in hip hop. MCs will name people. They'll name their managers. They'll name their friends. They'll name, you know, Aries. They'll name other rappers. And punk rock, for some reason, like, it's very rare for a punk rocker to like refer to himself directly or his friends or whatever. NoFX is one of the few bands that like comments on things on the scene. I know that guy, or I know of that guy. And so when you're listening to the songs, it makes them timely. Maybe not quite as timeless, but it makes it amusing and fun and honestly more media. And you're like, I know exactly what he's talking about. I know that guy. I know that guy's quirks. That's really funny. So Mike is extremely skilled in that. That being said, I wish the music was better. Like, it's kind of like the semi-slow melodic thing NoFX has been doing. If NoFX did every track or most tracks like 6 Years on Dope or Deadbeat Mom, I would like them a whole lot better. It just, the lyrics and the concepts of a lot of their songs are really good. It just, the music is too melodic punk for me.
But yeah, I notice he uses this sort of sad voice again, where I could feel that Cokie the Clown has been kind of creeping into NoFX. Yeah.
I thought as an art project, Cokie the Clown was great as an art project. That being said, we've heard it, the sad Mike, maybe he's being genuine. But from an artistic standpoint, we've seen that picture before. Now I want to see what's next, you know?
Yeah, and that's I echo what both of you are saying here, where from a lyrical standpoint, this is my favorite NoFX stuff. Where, I mean, you want to compare it to like songs, let's say like Mattersville or 13 Stitches, where it's just him running through this list of bands that are associated with this or that scene that they've been associated with. And just even from an educational standpoint, it's super fun just to hear everyone referenced in that way. I mean, like, you swing back to like, you know, to something like 13 Stitches, where, you know, John Wayne was a Nazi and Joey Shithead was drunk, right? Like lyrics like that, where it's just, you feel like you're a little bit of a fly in the wall of this community that's kind of grown up around punk. And I love that stuff. I could eat it up. And this falls into that in that kind of sense. And John, that lyric that you mentioned in particular is the most biting thing on the whole, yeah, on the whole song, right? That's so funny to me. So on the one hand, I'm down with that. I'm also totally down with what you were saying there, John, about like how like NoFX is probably one of the only bands that sort of does that name dropping of other bands that are in the scene. Like Rancid and the people that are in the Rancid universe did it for a time. You think of a song like, say, like Wrongful Suspicion off of Life Won't Wait, where it ends up him yelling about like Lars is yelling about Sick of It All and Agnostic Front and, you know, Marky Ramone and the Intruders or whoever else he mentions at the end of that song. And then some of the bands that were associated in that sort of wider third wave ska world did that kind of thing. Like the Stubborn All-Stars would have done it on some of their things too. Or, maybe some of that early Slacker stuff would have got into that, where you just got the sense that there was more of a community around it. And I love that NoFX does that kind of thing. But like the other songs from this thing, like I feel like there's some oomph that's missing. And I don't know if it's that Mike is not singing at the same sort of frenzy that he would have earlier, or if it's just something about the way that these songs are just recorded and produced. But yeah, like none of the new NoFX stuff has... None of it's grabbed me by the throat, right? Like it's all just been, it's been fine. It sounds like a NoFX song, I guess, but I'm not, you know, I'm not inclined to lean in and turn up the volume and like really get into it. And I don't know what that is.
There have been other bands that have definitely have done this over the years, but he has made NoFX has made a mastery of it. We were just talking about that. Got two jealous agains and got one jealous again. But there was another song, and I don't know if it was on one of their albums. I think it was on like one of the compilations of B-sides or something. It was called Jaw Knee Music, JAWKNEE Music. And it was like every punk song they could think of that used the like generic term of Johnny as the protagonist, like sticking them all together in a song. And it's brilliant, brilliant stuff. They don't have that kind of brilliance anymore. I know a lot of kids who got into NoFX later on than I did like the newer stuff a lot more. But if you were there in the late 80s, early 90s, it's really hard to get excited about the new stuff.
This is a relatively minor point. But when Mike talks about, you know, UK subs and this band and that band, he kind of talks about them almost as if like a teenager that is, you know, in USA, UK subs in England, and you only know the band through the record. I wonder, and NoFX is probably one of the five most successful monetary punk bands ever, you know, top 10, you know, Green Day's bigger, Clash, Sex Pistols, that's about it, maybe a few others, you know. I wonder if Fat Mike has dwarfed the UK subs, the Partisans, you name it, you know, record sales, money wise.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
If they're playing a festival, NoFX would be higher on the bill.
But I wonder what Mike's perspective of, say, Charlie Harper of the UK subs is. Does Mike see Charlie Harper and say, oh, I did better than that? Or is he like, oh, my God, that's Charlie Harper, the legend? Or does he see Charlie Harper and he's like, oh, that's a colleague of mine. We're both punkers and we have both, I guess, you know, we are both entitled to a certain level of respect because we've achieved great success in our respective fields. I wonder.
Well, you know, part of being a great punker is pissing on your idols. But the fact of the matter is, I think he does respect them to a certain extent. I remember I saw a really strange bill. It was on a Riot. It was one of the Riot Fest shows. It was in a club. And it was NoFX and Addicts. And I can't remember who else. But I remember Mike joking about how the guys from Addicts were in their 50s and they were only in their 40s or something. But I think ultimately he does have a respect for the forebears, but I don't know.
Does that mean he's in awe of them or he just sees them?
No, I don't think that's the case.
You know what I mean?
No, because if he wanted to, you know, there was a time where he put out some records by some older bands, you know, like there's a Dickies record on Fat, and I'm sure there's others that I can't think of right away, but you know, if he was in awe of them or really was into them that much, he'd put out the records for them because most of the last, you know, recent UK subs records are hardly tearing up the charts, and NoFX could probably do a pretty good job of selling them.
I don't know if he really, I mean, who knows, but I don't think he's really that involved in that aspect of the label right now.
You don't think? I don't know. Maybe you're right. I have no idea.
Anyways.
So that's NoFX. Like, we talked about NoFX, you assholes. See? You didn't just talk about the virus. Cause...
Way to endear yourself to the listener, Adam.
Adam, when you said the virus,
you heard it here first. You heard it first, thinking of the band, the virus.
The band, the virus. I'm like, the virus? We never talk about the virus.
You see, I have such conflicting thoughts right now being on a podcast and talking about this stuff because we've been stuck home. Oh, well, I've been stuck home. I assume you've been stuck home. But because I've been stuck home this whole time, I haven't. I listen to podcasts in the car. That's when I'm using them the most. And since I've been home, I have just been sitting next to my record player listening to records like in full for like a fucking week and a half.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's so great. I love it.
It's like the upside. It's like the bright side of the apocalypse.
It is. I've physically touched and absorbed so many of these records than I have otherwise. And I am so in, like, if nothing else, I hope that like it really drills it into my head that I need to make more time in my week to do this because like it's so good. But because I've been doing that, I have not I haven't touched my podcast app in like a week, 2 weeks now, right? And I was behind in the first place on the shows that I listen to. And I'm so worried that I'm going to go turn on these podcasts. It's going to be like some episode from the middle of February. And the people are going to be like, just like yucking it up about whatever February shit's happening. And then I'm going to have to listen to like the slow progression of world news that I've already lived through affect these people, and it's going to be insufferable to listen to. So I'm worried. I'm worried that that's us some of this time.
Adam, is your revelation that you've discovered that it's fun to listen to music? Is that your revelation?
My revelation is yes. Turn off these podcasts, you idiots. Go put on a record. Why are you listening to this? Especially the parts with John. Come on. You could fit like a pretty good chunk of an A-side whenever John's talking. Crazy in the Brains. John, you said this was a story that you could give a nice pithy summary of, so I'm not going to read the 9 paragraphs you wrote about it. So what do we need to know? What's going on? Tell the people.
It's just going on, and I'll be quick because we're going to be talking about Crazy in the Brains later on. Crazy in the Brains, they got a new EP coming out. It's coming out, I think, May, and it's got 6 songs on it. It's produced by one of the Bouncing Souls, and Crazy in the Brains are in their prime. It is definitely their fastest, wildest release to date. It's still kind of got like their weird wackiness involved in it. And I mean, I played Crazy in the Brains. Actually, I'm gonna play Crazy in the Brains today. How you like that? Anyways, they've got a wonderful song called "I Don't Deliver Pizza Anymore," which is a really moving song about how the lead singer Chris' life was changed when he was in an accident while he was delivering pizzas. And I don't know what it's going to take, boys. I think it might happen for this band. It better if there's justice in the world. I hope it happens. But Crazy in the Brains, like, they really are an amazing, amazing band. They're super amazing. I mean,
they're like
amazing.
A decade in at this point, right, John?
Yeah, they're about a decade into it, you know. So, I mean,
think if lightning was going to strike, it probably would have struck by now, if we're being honest, right?
Well, I mean, yes, but also lots of bands crack after 10 years. You know what I mean?
They crack all right.
I mean, Chumbawamba didn't become famous till like 15 or 18 years into the 18 years into the band.
And also serious stylistic change.
Actually, that's not true. They changed before they became famous.
They changed before they became famous, but they were far cry from what they started out as.
But I mean, I don't know why we're arguing about Chumbawamba, but Chumbawamba like morphs every.
Because that's what we do, John.
So they morphed like 4 times before they became famous. Yeah. The point being is, Crazy in the Brains are an awesome band. I hope a certain label picks them up. I don't know if they will. I think if they did pick them up, I don't want to say it. I hope they
if
do.
If you're listening, Fat Mike, after all the nice things we said about the new NoFX, these guys up.
Like, to me, Crazy in the Brains is an ideal Fat Records band, and I don't know what the I don't know why they're not signing them. You know, like,
John, every band on Fat Records sounds virtually the same. I don't know how you can say that.
The reason I can say that is because Fat Records signed Nightbirds, and those records did relatively well. And Crazy in the Brains is kind of halfway between a Fat Records band and Nightbirds, if you will. But also they're fun.
I don't hear that, but yeah,
they're fun. They're wild. They're wacky, and I've never seen them not completely rock an audience. And Fat basically signs bands on how much will they rock the audience. Pretty much every Fat band is an audience.
Don't you see them as more like they'd be more like an alternative tentacles band? Because Jello seems to have more of an ear for that kind of weirder stuff, I think.
I think Jello is better. Certainly Jello's got better taste than Fat Records. I shouldn't diss Fat Records. But anyway, I love alternative tentacles records, but this year they're focusing on reissues. So from a marketing standpoint, maybe they're better off going with another.
From the standpoint of a 46-year-old man who buys mostly reissues, I love that idea.
What's the purpose of that statement? I don't understand the purpose of that statement, Tom.
Well, no, I just love reissues. I mean, half of what I buy are reissues. I love that they're working on reissues because they obviously have an incredible catalog.
Yeah, alternative catalog. If you ask me,
no, that wasn't a slight against Crazy in the Brains.
If you ask me, Alternative Tentacles, best record label in the world. But that being said, I don't know if they're going to give Crazy. But see, also Alternative Tentacles, though, like, their audience is very weird, you know. And whereas Crazy in the Brains, I think, is better positioned to a normal audience, and they're the really? Weird band. Yeah, I mean, like, oh, definitely. Like if you position Crazy in the Brains to a normal audience, like, oh wow, these guys are kind of weird. But if you put them in front of the Alternative Tentacles audience, they're like, well, how come they're not singing about, you know, having sex with dead dogs or something like that? You know what I mean? Like,
well, they're 10 years in. Maybe it's time for a lyrical change.
But anyway, listen, Crazy in the Brains is at their peak. I hope it pops. We'll see. They are amazing, and I'll be playing a song later on the podcast by them.
All right, cool. So that is Crazy in the Brains news. I like that song. It's all right. It's cool. I wasn't sure about it at first, but it grew on me severely over the course of the runtime of it.
Me, like, the past 2 records, I'm like, oh, I don't like it as much. And then I listen, it just gets better and better every time I listen to it. The new record's great.
Which is to say, I think, like, from a critical standpoint, that song has bones. Like, it's a it is a well-written piece of pop music that they can make work, you know, regardless of how much of a crazy inflection they try to put onto it, or how much they kind of it's a pretty straight song. Like they don't really rely too much on the xylophone tricks or anything like that with it. And to approach it just as a rock song on its own, I'm like, oh, that's all right. That's cool. I'm down with this. It when I first listened to it, I was like, this isn't super crazy, but it's not, it's actually like, they're not a joke band, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You know, they seem to actually know what they're doing. Speaking of people that know what they're doing, John Cale at one point, he mixed the debut.
He's the producer, right?
Yes. So he did the original mix on the 1969 debut by the Stooges. And those mixes were rejected by Elektra Records at the time. So before the actual release of the record, the recordings were remixed by Iggy Pop and Elektra president Jack Holzman. And those are the ones that were released into the world and sort of became part of the popular vernacular. So most of the John Cale mixes, they continued to exist in a vault somewhere, and they showed up officially on a 2005 deluxe CD reissue of The Stooges. Well, now there are records on their way of the John Cale mix of The Stooges. They're showing up in April 2020 on Elektra and via Vinyl Me Please. I don't exactly know what that is. It's a website, I guess. But in any case,
Vinyl Me Please. It's kind of like people that don't really know that much about records is you pay them a monthly subscription fee and they mail you a record, but you end up like paying like $35 to $40 per month for a record that you don't even really want most of the time. You know, like you'll get the Stooges one month, but the next month they'll send you like a remastered version of like, I don't know, like something that's not even like that cool, you know, something like
Tusk.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, like that's a good example. But another example might be like a Debbie Gibson record for some reason. You know what I mean? They're trying to be diverse, but it's like, you know, no one really wants it.
Nobody's interested in being diverse if it's that expensive.
Yeah, true.
Have you heard these? You heard the mixes they're releasing, John, or no?
I've heard most of them on the CD version, which doesn't have them in the album order. But I think there's actually two that aren't on the CD that are on the record.
So what is your overall take on this? Are they gutsier mixes or less gutsy mixes, or what are we looking at here?
The John Cale mix are very much analogous to the Velvet Underground. I think they call them the closet remixes or whatever, in that they're drier, they're rawer. I can't say that they're better, but it sounds like the microphone is closer to everybody. And of course, the Stooges, the official version of the first record, is famous for its heavy, dark sound, whereas the John Cale mixes sound more like a guy right in front of the microphone kind of singing. There's less murkiness. It's got a little bit of a sharper sound to it. I can't say that it's better. And I actually think this is a circumstance where the record label interfering actually made the record better, to tell you the truth. And I'm not talking smack on John Cale because he's legendary. But, I mean, I will say
he's legendary, but he's not a punk rock guy. He was an artsy-fartsy kind of guy at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, but he in part made the first Stooges record. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, he recorded it. I get that. But, you know, that happened with raw power, too. You know, the Bowie mixes were famously panned, and there are bootleg versions, and I think even official releases now of a much rawer mix than what was originally out there, right?
There's technically three mixes of raw power. There's the David Bowie mix, which was the officially released one, which the band famously was unhappy with. They're like, well, it doesn't sound chaotic or powerful enough. And I listen to the record, I'm like, what the hell did you guys sound like? Because it sounds pretty chaotic and powerful. Then in 1997, Iggy Pop remixed it himself. And people are pretty critical of that version. And I it's kind of hard to listen to because it's very white noisy. They call that ear fatigue. Then there's something called the Raw Power mix. No, I'm sorry. The album's called Raw Power. It's called like Raw Mixes.
Rough Power. Yep, yep.
That's the original Iggy Pop mix where he didn't know what he was doing. So he mixed everything in one channel and only one thing in another channel. And people are like, oh, that's the greatest version. It's not. I mean, like, maybe if the sound quality was better, it would be. But I think the David Bowie mix.
Version I have? I assume I have the regular Bowie mix, but I don't know.
If you have the 1997 CD mix, that's the Iggy Pop mix, which is much different than the David Bowie mix. If you're going to get Raw Power, the version to get is the 2-CD version, which has Iggy Pop, the David Bowie mix on one CD and a live show on the other CD. If you're going to get one version of Raw Power.
The problem is, if you get accustomed to a certain mix, you're always going to favor that mix. Very rarely do you hear a remix and say, "Oh, I like that better than the one I've already become accustomed to." So I don't even know that I'm real interested in this, honestly.
I am as an academic thing. However, that being said, is to me it can be a little frustrating to have like, which version do I listen to? Do I listen to the official version or the other version? And to me, sometimes that's annoying. But then again, I've got the Peter Tosh has Legalize It, which has got the international version and the Jamaican version. And I love having both because they're kind of different. So, like, it's a lot of fun. But neither of those is clearly better than the other. I think with the Stooges, the official mix is better than the Don Cale mix. But as a curio, it's cool. And, you know, you put it on once in a while and dig it, and it's cool. You know, so I'm being a negative Nancy here. Anything of the Stooges that is quality material, I'm in favor of making public. This is quality material, unlike so much of the barrel scrapings that has been put out under the Stooges' name. This is actually worthwhile, so it's good that this is coming out, as opposed to like the multitude of horrible live albums that you can't even hear, or like here's the 17th mix of I've Got It Right. Well, it sounds like the same as the other 16, you know. So,
Yeah, there you go. That's the thing you can buy. If you want to buy those kind of things. All right. We have two releases that I think we want to make mention of. We'll see if anyone has anything to say about them, but I want to make mention of them because you as a listener probably care about one and or both of these. So first of all, the Suicide Machines just had a record come out on Fat. It's called Revolution Spring. It is their first full length since 2005's War Profiteering is Killing Us All. So, which was out, I don't know, Side One Dummy, I think?
Side One Dummy.
Yeah, yep. So the Suicide Machine's been off
deeply,
grid.
I've been deeply immersed in third wave ska for something I've been working on lately, so.
Yeah, there you go.
I still don't love it, but I've got to say, I'm getting a begrudging respect for it, Adam.
Yeah, so the band kind of like broke up after War Profiteering, and they weren't doing too much as the Suicide Machines until around 2009 or so, and then they did some reunion shows and this or that, and have played, you know, festivals and Warped Tour and whatever else in between then and now. So they have this record out. It's called Revolution Spring. You can hear it on the internet. I have not, but I'll just jump to the other one, and then we'll talk about both these bands. John's buddy, Ben Weasel. And his quasi titular band, Screeching Weasel, are also back. They also have a new record, and it is also out on the internet right now. It is called Some Freaks of Atavism. I feel like I'm pronouncing it differently than you, but whatever. That's what it's called. You can find it.
Switch a couple letters around.
Google's really good at correcting spellings. Just type in whatever the fuck you want, and it'll come up with it. Anyways, so this record just came out.
Unless you're so far off that it picks an entirely different word.
Yes, but you could probably narrow it down by typing Screeching Weasel as well. Anyways, this is following up the Baby Fat Act 1 record that they had come out on Recess back in 2015. So it is a new full length. It has the cover art that is riffing on why am I blanking on this?
Clockwork Orange,
right? Some Clockwork Orange riffing cover art,
which was actually that album cover was actually inspired by a show poster from I can't remember where, but that was actually a gig poster that had shown up years ago, and I know they took the artwork from that.
So anyways, so both these things are out. So so Tom, have you listened to either of these things? Like Screeching Weasel is
I've listened to both of them.
Is Screeching Weasel is in your canon, but Suicide Machines are sort of geographically akin to you, right?
So Suicide Machines have never really been huge on my listening list. The first two records I know are kind of considered classics, Destruction by Definition and Battle Hymns, and I've kind of come to appreciate those over the years. And the two after that are I can't get into it all. And then the last two, I think, are pretty good. I'm a big fan of Jay Navarro, the singer. And after that, he did a band called Hellmouth, which is like this super intense hardcore metal type band. And it was sort of a natural extension from the kind of aggressive stuff he was doing at the end of the Suicide Machines. Anyway, and then he did a band called Brink Anchor that I'm absolutely in love with. I got every final thing they've done. But the thing I will say about the Suicide Machines, musically, it's still not my very favorite thing. I'm not a huge upstroke horns guy, even though Suicide Machines were never a big horns band. But lyrically, I think it's really good. I think the new Suicide Machines lyrically is really good. I mean, granted, Jay and I are the same age. Maybe there's a certain amount of inevitability of that, but I really like it. And as far as the Weasel thing, I'm a huge Screeching Weasel fan. I know it doesn't necessarily fit my profile, but I just in the like early 90s.
I think it fits your profile.
I got into punk from listening to the first wave. In 1987 or so, I started listening to punk rock, and my first bands I listened to were The Clash, Ramones, Sex Pistols. That was my first thing. So by the early 90s, I was kind of waning a little bit. And Screeching Weasel is, I got to say, the band that probably more than any other band in the early 90s pulled me back into the scene. So I've always loved them. Their albums have been hit and miss since maybe Wiggle or My Brain Hurts or that era, like early mid 90s. But this has definitely been the Screeching Weasel album that I've listened to the most in years and years and years, because my job is sort of change, so I have time. But I'm really digging it. Some of the songs kind of irritate me because they have a couple of them have sort of a level of like Blink 182 level of production that irritates me, but I like the songs for the most part. The thing I will say is I love Screeching Weasel when the guys in the band couldn't play so well. It loses a little bit of its magic when you have these really, really good musicians and everything's so polished. I sort of liked it when it was on the brink of falling apart. But I think the songs are still there. So I don't know if you guys have listened to either of these, if you have an opinion, but I need the Screeching Weasel album to get a vinyl or at least a CD physical release.
I haven't heard the new Weasel one outside of a few clips, but the few clips sounded, you know, like what I would want from it. So I'm going to go circle back and check for that. Suicide Machines for me was a huge band when they were out. Like I was at exactly that right age. I was like the right age of teenager in like 1997 or 98 or whenever Destruction and Battle Hymns came out.
Destruction came out in 96 and Battle Hymns in 98. So yeah, you were definitely
right. Anything in and around 1997 is something that I'm probably have direct heightened teenage experience with. So we went up to, I remember like when we were teenagers, as soon as one of us could drive, we figured out a way to like, you know, load up a K car full of people and drive up to Toronto so we could see the Suicide Machines play. Like we saw them they're one of those times where like when you were a teenager and you could do stuff like this, where like we went in town and found the local rock radio show that they're doing an interview on and like hung out in front of the radio station as they were doing the interview and then like chatted with them there. And then, you know, went down and did their show in town where they were probably playing with, I don't know, they were touring with like probably less than Jake or something like that at the time. Right. And so, but like,
you can pretty much list the bands they might've been touring with. Less Than Jake, Skank and Pickle, all this.
So we chased around the Suicide Machines for a good while. We ate those first two records up. The third self-titled one where they got all poppy. We gritted our teeth about it, but then we twisted and turned and tried to figure out ways that we actually liked it because we didn't want to discount the band, I think. So it's one of those things where like, you know what, their cover of, you know, Didn't Promise You a Rose Garden is not bad for being a cover of that, of that song. Right. Or sorry, Never Promise You a Rose Garden. Right. Like, If you're gonna do that, it's all right. The single from that record, it just popped back into my head, and I realized that like, it does not at all sound like a Suicide Machines. It is clearly a bid for rock radio stardom. But
what was the single?
It was the one where like he was basically in the video he's singing a love song to his dog. But they don't reveal it's singing to his dog sort of until the last minute of it. It's like, it is a jangly 60s-ish pop song. And from the standpoint of coming at it from destruction by definition, super infuriating. But when I look at it with some detachment from the band that it is a perfectly serviceable mid to late 90s pop rock song, right? Like, it is.
I hardly consider that a high compliment. I mean, the radio was awful at that point.
No, but if you were listening to like alternative radio at that point, and you were listening to bands like, I don't know,
Third Eye Blind, John's favorite.
Sure, but if you were listening to,
and if you step back from that,
if
ledge,
you were
my
listening
friend.
To that kind of stuff, or if like a big song for you would have been something like Harvey Danger's Flagpole Sitter or something like that, or like one of those songs that was like a big hit.
If that would have been the theme of my life, Adam, I would have jumped out in front of a semi on the highway.
Right, but if you were listening to a lot of radio at that time, and I was a teenager, right? Then the song was called Sometimes I Don't Mind. Something like Sometimes I Don't Mind would have fit into that universe. I'm gonna say that the Suicide Machines, the self-titled record, it did come out in 2000, so it missed the mark by a couple years, I guess, in that one. But yeah, but then by the time Steal This Record and War Profiteering came out, I was in college.
But War Profiteering was a much different record. They got really political. Imagine Some Gasoline and War Profiteering were much more political, much angrier records.
They were clearly
a reaction to the end of the like major label era, right?
They fit into that kind of like during the Bush administration, you know, pushing back against neoliberalism kind of thing.
See, I would have thought that would fit right in with a young, you know, idealistic college bound Adam White.
See, it would have fit in with college bound Adam White, but like in college, Adam White was more like trying to listen. Like in college, me was listening to like, I was experimenting with all this like I guess stuff that you would call now, like stuff that you would have called at the time, like college rock in the '80s, like the Replacements and Husker Du, and I was listening to old ska, and I was getting into all this like Canadian indie stuff. And I remember like that when those Suicide Machines records came out, and they were just like they had just come off being like absurdly poppy for the sake of, you know, shooting for the stars there, and then all of a sudden they came back and they were doing this like angry punk band thing. Like, I just didn't buy it. I listened to them and I like this style of music that they're playing. I like it when bands play this style of music. I even like it when bands that were popular go back to this style of music. If you want to look at it from like the standpoint of like Rancid 2000 or something like that. But I remember like I listened to them at the time and I was just like, I'm like, nah, like not like I'm not putting the energy in, guys. I'm gonna go over here now. You do what you do. And I just wandered away. But now, seeing that they have released nothing between then and now, I feel like there is not a lot of barrier to me going and checking out this new Suicide Machines record.
No, I think you'll dig it, Adam. I think you'll be able to relate to a lot of it at your age now, at the golden age of 38. Now, John, you don't care about either of these bands, if we're being honest, right?
I'm not what?
You don't care about either of these bands, if we're being honest.
No, I honestly don't care.
But I know there's a band that you really care about that I know you're dying to talk about, and you're going to more than make up for Adam and I monopolizing the conversations.
Indeed.
You want a seg?
Let's see. Well, should we play a song real quick, and then I'll come back and rant?
Yeah. I would. You know what? I would love to play. Let me see if I can find it. I would love to play a new Suicide Machine song that I think is really good, that represents, I think, what they're doing.
Yeah, do it.
If you guys are up for that.
Do it.
I gotta make sure I can find. No, it's a political song, and it's a little bit political, but these guys are smart now. They're older guys. They have a perspective. I don't really know Jay, but he's definitely a friend of a friend, and we have a lot of common friends, being from Michigan, you know, and being the same age. But let's do Potter's song from the new album. So the new Suicide Machines album is called Revolution Spring, and let's do Potter's song. It's so good.
that was Potter Song from the new Suicide Machines record. John Gentile.
Adam White.
We had some pre-show discussion about this particular story and whether we had anything to say about it. And you said you had a ton to say about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm gonna sit back in my chair and I'm gonna gaze wistfully at my empty glass of rye here and wonder why it has no rye in it. And you're gonna talk about this story.
Yeah, a lot of people are feel as though the first Third Eye Blind record was the best. Now there's a lot of ways you can take.
And John is one of those people.
No, actually, I really can't stand that band at all. Anyway, the point being, Public Enemy, man, Public Enemy is in the middle of some chaos. We'll have to rewind way back. So Public Enemy, of course, a very political hip-hop group from hip-hop's, quote, golden age, depending on what you define as the golden age. Two of the main players, Chuck D and Flavor Flav. Chuck D is one of the more political members of the group. Flavor Flav is the hype man and is kind of the comedy and the chaos of the group. For years, there has been tension between the two. 3 years ago, Public Enemy released an album called Nothing Moves Quick in the Desert. After it was released, Flavor Flav sued Chuck D, saying, I didn't even know you were putting out this album. I'm on it, but no one told me I was on it. I need to get paid. I haven't gotten paid anything. So the Flav sued Chuck D, and there has been bad blood ever since. About a month ago, Chuck D said Public Enemy is playing a Bernie Sanders rally. And then almost immediately, Flavor Flav sent the Sanders campaign a cease and desist saying, you don't have the permission to use my likeness in regards to your political causes. I haven't signed on to this, and stop doing it. So then Chuck D got mad, and he said, well, actually, Public Enemy isn't playing the Bernie Sanders benefit. Public Enemy Radio is playing the Bernie Sanders benefit. And the difference between Public Enemy and Public Enemy Radio is Public Enemy is Chuck D, Flavor Flav, DJ Lord, the S1Ws, and the Bomb Squad, and Professor Griff. Whereas Public Enemy Radio is Chuck D, DJ Lord, the S1Ws, the Bomb Squad, and Jahi, but not Flavor Flav and Professor Griff. And so it was unclear if Flav sued Chuck D or whatever. And then Chuck D said, that's it. Flav's out. He's not in Public Enemy, and he's not in Public Enemy Radio. So, ha. And then Flav said, you can't kick me out of Public Enemy. I'm a partner, not an employee. And then it seemed to cool off after that, you know. Then today, out of the blue, actually late last night, but in the first hours of April Fool's Day, Chuck D, at the time, Public Enemy put out a press release that said, aha, we got you. It was a big hoax. Chuck and Flav are still good friends, and it was all big hoax. And the reason we did this was to show that you can't trust the media, which, sidebar, doesn't even make any sense, because what you're saying, Chuck D, is that the media reported what you said correctly, but you're admitting that you lied, you know. So your point is that the media isn't trustworthy, but in this case, the media was accurate. The source was proven to be a liar. And the source that was proven to be a liar is a source that prides himself on giving you the truth, which is weird. And so anyways, then Chuck D said, and not only that, there's a new Enemy Radio album coming out. And Public Enemy Radio isn't called Public Enemy Radio. Now it's called Enemy Radio coming out. And it's out today. And the first single is called Food as a Machine Gun, which is not a great title. And not only is it the first single by Enemy Radio, it's Enemy Radio featuring Public Enemy, which makes the whole thing very convoluted, if you will. And then Chuck D said, so aha, we got you. Public Enemy's still cool, but now there's Enemy Radio, and we've got a track with Public Enemy, and we're proving that the media is not accurate. And I didn't buy it. I mean, like some other news sources did. I was very proud of Punk News. And by saying proud of Punk News, I mean proud of myself. And that we put Chuck D claims it was all a big hoax, while other news sources says it was all a big hoax. And like my bullshit detector was going, I'm like, this prank makes no sense. It's like, because when Chuck D and Flav Flav were going at each other, like they were getting pretty vicious. Like Chuck D was like, Flav needs to go back to rehab. And it's like that. If this is all a big hoax, then that seems like very extreme. And like, and what's the payoff? And like, this is just, there's no payoff. It's just confusing. And then sure enough, about 4 hours later, Flavor Flav put out a tweet that said, I'm not part of this hoax. There's more things going on than just promoting your little album. The feud is not a hoax. The feud is real. Which, and I don't mean to talk. I don't mean to talk trash on Chuck D. I mean, Chuck D is an amazing lyricist. He's one of the most iconic hip hop guys of all time. He's a great artist. I don't agree with everything that he says. And as a person, I'm not sure if I like him or not. As an artist, I think he's great. But I don't know what his end game was here, because if we assume that Flav is telling the truth now, then why did he think him falsely saying that him and Flav have worked it out when they clearly have not? How did he not think that wasn't going to backfire at all? And from a certain perspective, I think I understand Chuck D's perspective. He's like, it reflects, and this is just me guessing, I could be wrong. This reflects poorly on Public Enemy that there's infighting. So we're going to try to change the truth that we're not actually infighting. But his plan was poor, and it just made it look like all that much more of a disaster. Where the better plan would have been to say, we're fighting now, we'll work it out. Wait 6 months, wait a year, it'll get worked out. And it would have gotten worked out. And so Chuck D is an intelligent guy, and I get the impression he's pretty he moves with purpose. But here it just seems like he's panicking and like just doing weird things that make no sense. But not only that, is his one of his main talking points is, I tell the truth, I'm going to tell you how it really is. And history, one of the big things about Public Enemy is the history of African Americans has been erased and warped by the media. We're going to tell you what is really happening, which is true. But then he goes and lies about what's actually happening. But not only that, his lie is disproven within a matter of hours by the person that he's complicit in the lie with. So I think everybody makes missteps here and there. I just think this is one of Chuck D's bigger foibles, if you will. Hmm. I don't know what he's planning.
I don't know what he's planning.
I mean, how is the zany scheme going to work out in any circumstance? Like clearly Flav and Chuck are angry at each other. So why did he think Flav would agree to this scheme that Flav wasn't even informed of, you know?
Mm.
And then only that is, see, here's the frustrating thing. And I go back and forth on Howard Stern, and a lot of people are frustrated with Howard Stern right now. And then he seems to want to erase his past, which no problem with an artist changing. Artists change all the time. But then don't lie to us or insult us and say, oh, I didn't used to do that. And then Chuck D is kind of doing that. He's like one of his things was, well, Flav has never been involved in any political things since the start of Public Enemy. Well, that's not true. Have you seen the video for Fight the Power? Have you seen the movie Fight the Power? You know,
Flav might not know what they were talking about, John.
Listen, Flav, people think people say Flav is dumb. Flav is not dumb. Flav is actually an extremely intelligent person that is actually what do you call it when you like Rain Man? He's a savant. Yeah, Flav can play 15 instruments. He never had a musical lesson in a day of his life. And so, like Flavor Flav is actually an extremely talented person. And that's, I guess, the grand irony of Flavor Flav is he's so talented, he's so smart, that he's never really had to work for anything. He would disagree with that. But fame came relatively easy to him, you know? And so you see that with a lot of artists, you know, like the Neutral Milk Hotel guy. They're so talented that it kind of causes them problems down the line because they didn't really have to work for it that hard compared to other artists, you know? So anyways, I listen, all in all, this is not going to be that big of a deal. This is just going to be one little footnote in the history of Public Enemy. A year from now, Public Enemy is going to get back together, and this will just be a footnote. And I guess it would have worked better for Chuck if the album wasn't so mediocre, but I listened to the album and it's pretty mediocre.
Somewhere, some child is just discovering this is going to be like, man.
This is what you guys are talking about?
Enemy Radio was so great. That early Public Enemy stuff was so weak.
Well, anyways, I'll
tell you what, boys, we managed to make this an epic episode, if nothing else. Lengthwise, I mean,
it certainly has length and girth, which is all that anyone wants. John, what else are we talking about here?
Way to take it to a dirty place, Adam. That's usually my job. Thank you.
Let's see. I have at least one more thing that we want to talk about, then maybe we'll wrap it up. Let's see what we got here in the chamber. We did cover almost everything, though. Oh, here's one thing I want. Actually, well, we'll kick Bob Villain until next week because we definitely should talk about Bob Villain. And Adam and Tom, you guys should listen to that before next week. But one last thing I want to mention, Cro-Mags, new album out in June. It's called In the Beginning. First Cro-Mags album in 20 years. And of course,
finally something John and I can agree on this week. No question, right?
Yeah. Definitely. It's the first Cro-Mags album in 20 years. And of course, as everyone knows by now, it's Harley Flanagan, Gabby, Rocky George, and one other guy. Of course, John
Joseph. Is it 20 years, John, or is it like 25 years?
Well, technically it's 21.
Those last couple were pretty much an abomination.
But no Paris Mayhew, no John Joseph, no Mackie Jason. So it's Harley. That being said, the two singles they put out preceding this album, fantastic. Here's the kicker. The big deal is that the Cro-Mags were like, it's come out on Victory, and everyone's like, ooh, this is not going to be good. Harley and Tony Brumbel gone head-to-head on Victory. Well, of course, who's the album coming out on now? Not Victory. Not Victory. It's some label I never even heard of. I think it might be like some kind of investment firm or something like that.
That's always good.
I'll pull it up in a second.
It's Mutual Financial.
It is. It's something weird. Here we go. It's a Rising Empire and Mission 2 Entertainment. I've never heard of either of those, honestly. I think I might have heard of Rising Empire, maybe, but you know. I was actually somewhat saddened by that.
Sounds like a Japanese World War II organization or something.
I was actually somewhat saddened by that because the Cro-Mags material released so far has been really good. And say what you will about Victory, and we certainly have. They know how to get distribution. So that's hypothetically, true.
You can get their shit. Yep.
Hypothetically, this could have been the album. It's like Cro-Mags, The Return to Glory. But instead it's come out and I hope it is. You know, I hope it is. But I mean, this is just some label that no one's ever really heard of. Like, so are they going to have the power, the press power, to make this actually happen? Are they going to have the knowledge to get into them? Like, Victory knows how to get into Revolver magazine. Victory knows how to get into Blabbermouth. You know, I don't know if these other labels do or not, you know? And so I hope it doesn't just become like another Harley solo album, which are good, but like, you know, they kind of float away as soon as they appear.
John, you and I, everybody knows how you get into Revolver, how you get into all these magazines. You buy advertising and then they cover your bands. It's as simple as that, right? Well, that
with many magazines, very true. Absolutely.
I mean, Victory Records is buying ads in every magazine and they miraculously, their artists get covered.
So
coincidence, I'm sure.
So anyways, I'm very excited for this album. I'm definitely going to buy it. I mean, like if,
yeah, I look forward to it. The singles were really good. Both the 7-inches were good. Though I haven't bought either of them yet, but they're very good. I wonder if it'll have the tracks from those singles, or if it's gonna be all new or what.
Who knows? I would be okay with a little overlap, but I don't want like everything on the singles on the album. You know.
Yeah, no. Every single at least has to have one exclusive track. You'd hope.
Yeah, definitely. So, anyways, I mean, I'm excited. I would assume this is because Victory was bought by who were they bought by? Some investment company or something, or not Hasbro? But
shit, we just talking about.
I know what you're thinking of, but that wasn't Victory that got bought by that big toy company, was it?
That was E1. It was E1 Entertainment that got bought by Hasbro. But somebody bought Victory. I forgot who it was. Well, it was wasn't it like where old punk bands go to die? What do you call it? I'll look it up.
I went down.
That's where they really go to die. Concord Music is not who I thought it was. It was Concord Music. Yeah. I was of Rise Records, but it was Concord Music.
Oh, Rise. Yeah. You haven't heard much from Rise lately. I wonder if they're doing anything.
I think, honestly, like a lot of record labels are fading away and this whole coronavirus thing. Unfortunately, I think it's going to kill a lot of record labels.
Some bigger bands like Hatebreed, love them or hate them. I'm not a huge Hatebreed fan, but they're like they put off putting out their album until fall.
Yeah, well, a lot of labels are doing that, but
I mean, how much that's got to cost these bigger bands? That's a serious decision, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But even now, okay, so like this Friday, the New Testament album comes out, and I either had to order it through Amazon or I can't get it physically. So I'm in a kind of a tough bind. I mean, are the record stores, because some of the record stores are still doing Discogs and stuff, but if you want to get things in a timely manner, you can't really do that with new releases. So I don't know. We're kind of in uncharted territory here. I don't know what I'm going to do with new releases, you know?
I don't mean to be a panicker, but the word around town is that a lot of these indie writ labels, bigger ones than you might think, might have some real problems in the next 3 or 4 weeks, like for real.
Oh, I'm terrified that my favorite venues are not going to make it.
Yeah. So
record labels are so, you know, record labels are so much different than they were when I was a kid anyway, where there was, I mean, you always have your big ones, your Sonys and your Columbias and your CBS and all that stuff. But, you know, there was some big reliable punk labels when I was a kid. And the only ones that are really left, Epitaph's really the only one left. It's so splintered now.
AT, bro. AT.
Yeah, but AT's still around, but they never have had a million seller. You know what I mean? No, AT never had the big breakout band. Well, and AT's been great and consistent. And I have a shit ton of alternative technicals records. I'm not saying
they were called the Dead Kennedys, but then they got taken away, you know.
So. Yeah. Well, and the fact of the matter is Jello's business practices have been called into question.
Yeah, I actually think it's not accurate though.
I'm just saying they've been called into question more than once.
But twice. That's it. Well, Dead Kennedys and Neurosis.
Leftover crack. Yeah, I know. They're a little unreliable.
There's a reliable source. Leftover crack. I love leftover crack. You know. Anyways,
you wouldn't let them watch your dog while you're on vacation.
I would not. one last thing. I would leave with Brad Logan. Brad Logan is the man. One last thing. Then we'll jump out. We did another April Fool's.
If my battery goes dead, dudes. I it's been fun. I'll try to hang in there.
Most sites don't do April Fools these days, but we always do April Fools at Punk News. I didn't want to give that position this year, so we did something kind of quiet. We took a small shot at Rancid. It wasn't like a room clearer, but I don't know. Adam, was this funny enough, you think, or this year's April Fools? And should we do April Fools next year?
I'm surprised you did April Fools this year because I feel that like the universe tried to just like, you know, the universe was so depressed that they were just like, we're not doing it this year. Fuck it. But that's why we need to do it, I think.
Hopefully everything will be so great next year that we can do a big one again.
This year's was innocent and you know, it was innocent in conception and innocent in delivery. And I think that from that standpoint, it hopefully provided someone with a smile before they ventured out into the hellscape that is our world.
I thought last year's was better. Punk used to reissue the first review. This year I thought was okay, but listen, what can you do under the circumstances?
I've taken my family a couple times. If you're at all a baseball fan, the Louisville Slugger Factory is actually a fascinating place to go to. And every time you go on the tour of the Louisville Slugger Factory, they give everyone in your household one of those little bats. And it never fails that before you get back to the hotel, your kids are trying to crack each other's skulls with those things. So anyway, beware the little bats, guys.
There we go.
I'm pretty proud of Punk News, and by
that's
Punk News,
that's the dead silence I love.
Yeah. I'm pretty proud of Punk News, and by Punk News I mean myself. In that, this
John, time, that's the second. That's actually the second time you said that.
It's the third time I've said it. Rule threes. In addition, the bats can be used to hit mini baseballs or to ward off muggers who are less than 5 feet tall. No one laughed at that. I think that was hilarious.
I'm laughing on the inside.
John, you don't know. People were laughing. They were just, you know, laughing outside of the comment section.
It's true.
So anywho, all right. So, John, are you playing a piece of music to kill this thing?
No, I'll play my favorite new band, Crazy. Or they're not that new anymore. My favorite new era band, Crazy in the Brain. Doing I Don't Deliver Pizza Anymore off their new album, new EP, that is. Go out, pick it up. This is, if you get a chance to see them live, see Crazy in the Brain live. They really are amazing and awesome, and it's not all hype. They are awesome.
Put so many miles on this bitch and it's no funds now. Took it out to Spain and back. Understand me. Think of all the time you spent telling me you love me. Big
up in the ER, there were doctors all around me. Bleeding on the brain in the street is where she found me. They done told me others, it's just like me, won't walk out of here. Used to question if my life had purpose, and now it's clear. Y'all just can't.